News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings at 8:07. On this Monday, day after Father's Day, let's recap with Peyton's idea and how it all went down. Now, she told you late last week her idea for Father's Day was...
Well, that was early last week. She was fired up. Early, I think Tuesday, we were talking with her around the dinner table. She said, hey, when are we going to celebrate Father's Day? Mm-hmm. And my wife and I were like, well, it's this Sunday, so why don't we celebrate it on Sunday? She said, well, I want to autograph... She meant she wanted to write a card. She wanted to autograph cards for dads in the entire neighborhood. And invite them to some sort of a party.
Where did she get that idea? Even think about dads outside of her own household.
Yeah, so that was her idea last week. And then I didn't mention...
You know, a little bit of Mother Teresa in there, you know?
Yeah, a little bit, a little bit. And I didn't mention it to her the rest of the week. I talked about it on the radio. And then sure enough, last night, as Father's Day festivities were beginning to wind down, and my dad was about to head off, my dad and mom, back to Alberta, she's sitting at the table scribbling furiously and trying to finish these cards for the dads all around the neighborhood. And then we had to, you know, de-escalate after it gets to a certain point and give her good reasons why that's why we're not going to do that tonight. And it started with, well, we don't know, you know, exactly which dads in the neighborhood are, we don't know which men are dads. And we don't want to make anyone sad, right? And give them the wrong card. And she was like, well, we'll just slide it under their doors. We can't just slide it under someone's door in the neighborhood. So I think eventually we came to the conclusion that she was going to hand them out to the dads at school today.
Okay.
The dads that are hanging around the school.
So I got it.
I think that was a good conflict resolution.
Yeah, good compromise there
so
in the end.
It was kind of like we were on our own U.S.-Iran talks yesterday in the Orwig household, but our conclusion much more peaceful for the time being. And I think we've seen the end of these talks with Peyton wanting to get all the dads together for one big Father's Day party. Same can't be said about the talks in Switzerland.
Well, yeah, but I don't know that you're out of the woods. Lindsey Graham said that there's a pretty good chance that in the end, Peyton will blow you up.
Yeah.
Peyton will decimate Dalton, I think were his words.
He says she's completely untrustworthy. Yeah. Whatever agreement we come to, I can't expect her to follow all the way through.
Yeah.
How about Lindsey Graham? Because I, you know, say what you want about him, and I've said a lot. I've said plenty. It is interesting to see how he plays every little twist and turn, because I think most of us, well, if you agree with me, you believe that Lindsey Graham loves him some war, right? Mm-hmm. And he'll say the right things at the right time, but he was just as giddy about this Iran war as probably anyone else
that you
can think of.
It's not just the words, it's the glee and when he says the words.
And we heard a lot of this from him with the Russia-Ukraine war, remember? And he's like, it's all about the money, the money that's underneath. So, but he didn't come out against this 60-day negotiation period and MOU as strongly as some other big names in this fight have, like Mark Levin and Ben Shapiro.
And some Republican lawmakers, too.
Yeah, like even Roger Wicker, Senate Armed Services Committee.
Tom Cotton. He's got his problems with it, and he's ranking. You know, he's up there.
I think Lindsey Graham, maybe, and depending on, you know, what the means to your end are, he's a little more politically savvy when it comes to Donald Trump. I think he knows how far to push with Trump before getting completely on Trump's bad side. And he knows Trump needs him, too, to get a lot of what he wants across the Senate. But Lindsey Graham kind of playing both sides here, doesn't it sound like? He said, you know, I like the idea of this deal.
Right. What he's saying is the idea of negotiating with a country is a really good idea, because it obviously is the opposite of all the bloodshed and all the destruction of the country of Iran. So he says that's a good thing. But the fact is, these goofballs, you know, then he turns around and just basically insults them, which I understand. But he's playing it both ways, where he's like, no, Trump's got a good idea here. But the idea that we're going to be able to negotiate in good faith with this group of people and the current, you know,
leadership in Iran.
The current leadership, there's a lot of opinion that it is even more right wing than the previous. So this is, yeah. So you want to hear what Graham's got to
say? Let's hear it.
All right, Lindsey Graham, I believe on CBS yesterday.
We're not giving any money to Iran that can change the course of history to try diplomacy. Is the MOU problematic? Yeah. I'd rather try diplomacy than take it off the table. The money Iran gets is not going to change the future of Iran. It's not enough to reconstruct the country. If you don't have a diplomatic path through the MOU, then you have to go to war or some other form of coercion. Let's try this. Let's try a diplomatic solution. I think it's going to fail. What happens next? I spent 4.5 hours with President Trump Friday. Here's what I think will happen next. If this deal fails, President Trump is going to take the Strait of Hormuz over by force. The United States will control the Strait of Hormuz, will charge a fee for all those who go through to pay for the operation, and we're going to expand the Abraham Accords in calendar year 2026. We're going to get Saudi Arabia to join the Abraham Accords, and which is the biggest change in 5,000 years in the Middle East. And if Iran contests control of the Strait of Hormuz by the United States, we'll obliterate them.
Yeah. So the it's not the last word he said. It's the last word of the particular cut that I decided to play on the air. So he said more, but it's again, he doesn't, he uses his verbs very creatively, like obliterate. That's a big word.
He loves that word.
He loves that word. Yeah. And Trump's the same way. He's been talking that smack, you know.
Yeah. And it even, you know, depending on which side of the coverage you're reading, could have tripped this up this weekend with Trump. I think, yeah, he saw some of these pot shots that Hezbollah keeps taking at
yep.
Israel,
mm-hmm.
and also the way that Iran reacts to those, and really kind of, you know, let Iran have it once again on Saturday for us,
well,
overnight
they closed
Sunday.
The strait.
And they said they closed the strait,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, according to like the report you had that said only 5 ships made it through the strait yesterday, looks like that maritime traffic has really picked up once again. Before the war began, the Iran-U.S. war, I think there were somewhere around 47 ships transiting the strait every day. And late last week, and then now again today, that number is closer to 24 to 30 that are making it through daily. Brent,
we had the blockade for a while too. You know,
yeah,
that we were the reason the strait was closed for
the Iranian ships.
For the Iranian ships, I should
yeah.
say, right? For maybe,
although Trump said he was getting that oil out anyway.
When did we do that? Maybe a month ago, 3 weeks ago,
something like
okay.
that. Yeah.
All right.
So, but Brent crude, and I've been kind of checking on that throughout the morning. It reached its lowest number this morning that it's been since the war began. It was all the way down to 75 a barrel at one point this morning. So,
I'm surprised how quickly that is. Become what our, you know, paying at the pump, how quickly that's affecting pumps here in Mobile.
Mm-hmm.
What are you paying on the text line? Let me know. 251-343-0106. I think I paid in the neighborhood of 330 or 322 yesterday to fill it up.
Yeah, and it was around 330 last week when mm-hmm. last time I filled up the old tank. So it's been kind of hovering 330, 320. Hopefully keeps on dropping, especially with big Independence Travel Day weekend on the way here.
Yep.
But you also have from this deal, and there was one senator, I believe it was, who, or may have just been a political commentator, who's really kind of changing his tune on the fund to rebuild Iran, the redevelopment fund, and that $300 billion estimate that keeps being thrown around there. And he's kind of changing his tune because the way that the Trump administration and Vance have been portraying it is more of a community effort from the Middle East and a lot of the other Arab states going in to rebuild Iran
right.
as a team
yeah.
rather than just giving the money over to Iran. And then also you have Vance this morning and a couple things that he has said. Iran will allow the United Nations nuclear inspectors into the country after these 2 days of talks. Vance told reporters as he gets ready to head back to Washington, quote, the Iranians have agreed to invite IAEA inspectors back into their country. That is a major milestone for the American people and the first step in permanently denuclearizing or permanently ending a nuclear weapons program in Iran. So that's exactly what we want to do, and that's exactly what we asked to happen. Tehran has not immediately confirmed what Vance had to say there. Inspectors from the IAEA have entered Iran, or have not entered Iran, since last year's 12-day war between Israel and Iran. So far, Iran has refused access. I guess the IAEA has been in, but they have not been allowed to go to the nuclear facilities, where, of course, we bombed them to the Stone Ages, as Trump has said, back in June of last year.
Right. In the country, but not near those facilities.
Not
doing their job, yeah.
Vance said, we laid a very good foundation for a successful final deal. He said, the final deal is the house. We set the foundation. We haven't built the house, but we've laid a successful foundation. He also claimed the two sides have established mechanisms to resolve disputes over the Strait of Hormuz, as well as the latest ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon, which so far, and knock on wood, today it appears that ceasefire is holding. Vance did not elaborate on what those mechanisms were beyond, quote, actually talking to each other and figuring out how to stop the shooting. And then as far as the Iranian assets, he said that those assets that are unfrozen as a result of a final peace deal would be used to purchase American soy, corn, and wheat for the benefit of the Iranian people. And he actually credited Kushner, the president's son-in-law and an envoy in these talks, with coming up with that idea, along with the Qataris, calling it a, quote, classic Trump deal, where if Iranian assets are ever unfrozen, they're going to make American farmers richer and to feed the Iranian people. That's the way Vance put it.
Yeah, that's all well and good. It's all well and good, I suppose, that Iran says what they've said about the nuclear inspectors. Look, how many times? I mean, doesn't it only seem a matter of time before they disappoint again, or before they throw a fit and do something, or close the strait again, whatever, that Iran just always seems to do? I mean, what is their word, really? And I think that's the point that a lot of people are making, is, you know, to negotiate. Obviously, Trump was feeling political pressure. He had to calm down the fireworks for a while for reaction on this side of the war.
Well, yeah.
You know, Republicans for the midterms, to everything else. The polls, they seem to be working against him. So,
this deal.
I guess they do.
They like that a deal is being made.
Right, right. They like that because they're tired of the conflict. But strategically, really, don't you have to beat them into submission to get them to do the right thing?
Well, here's the thing, too. And I agree. It seems like we keep going through the same cycle over and over again. But I think that's also being portrayed kind of untruthfully in a lot of the national media. And just like Trump went after the New York Times on Truth Social on Friday or Saturday, once again, because this isn't like Iran is in the exact same place that it was 4 months ago.
They're not.
You look up and down the roster of leadership that's been taken out, mm-hmm. and there have been a lot of those leaders taken out, and generally they're regarded as the more hardline leaders that have been taken out, and certain ones...
See, I'm hearing the opposite. I'm hearing the opposite.
You're hearing that the hardliners haven't been taken out?
I'm hearing that the hardliner, regardless of who's been taken out, the ones that are there now are as hardline, if not more hardline.
Well, I think there are some of those hardliners still there. I think the hope is that the Trump administration and Israel, through these bombing campaigns, have left a big enough window for some of the more moderate voices, like I think they're hoping that the president, Pezeshkian, is, some of those more moderate voices and the Iranian people to use that gap and maybe, you know, take control from whatever hardliners remain. But the fact that, you know, as Trump said, so much of their military has been decimated, and whether or not they've still retained the ability to sustain their ballistics missile program, you can't tell me that it's in as good of shape as it was before we started bombing. I mean, there have been billions and billions of dollars worth of damage done to their entire military program, their missile program, their nuclear program. Like you said, their Navy, it seems like everything except those fast little speedboats that they use in the Strait have been taken out.
Right.
It's almost like watching a boxing match, and you said, you know, how many times can we do this? How many times? But this is Iran who keeps getting knocked to the canvas. And I think the question is, how many more times are they going to be able to get up before the fight is completely called off?
Well,
Trump's here giving them one or two more chances to get up and maybe participate with the rest of the world in the economy. But if they don't, there's always that threat that he's going to put them down one more time, and that could be the last time.
Yeah. And it's just like, what? Like, why even giving them, you know, why? I know he didn't want to put troops on the ground, And so, you know, we've done this with minimal loss of life, American.
About 13 or 14.
Yeah, and of course, all lives precious, and it's awful that any of it happened at all. But I just think that, I hate to say this, I agree exactly with what Lindsey Graham said, that pretty much, we'll negotiate. If that's what you think we should do right now, the optics of it, we're going to give you, you know, what's the George Jones and Vince Gill, one more last chance, mm-hmm. right? So it seems like that's kind of what we're doing, you know, but we'll see. Also, I think it's notable that you've got the young Khamenei is now the leader of that nation. Doesn't nearly have the experience on the global stage that his father did. Maybe in a way that could be a weakness for them, too.
Yeah, could be. What was it that Senator Kennedy said? Unless you were homeschooled by a day drinker, you don't think that Iran's going to follow through with this?
Yeah, that's what he said.
But you have to hope, right?
Yeah, I guess so. 823, Dan and Dalton on Mobile Mornings.
Turn up your voice on the text line, 251-343-0106. Now, back to Mobile Mornings.
Many of you are doing just that on the text line. Mommy Issue says 14 dead, talking about Americans, and many more to come. Interesting prediction. Vance is being set up to take the fall on the negotiations. I think Vance is a breath of fresh air, to be honest with you. I think he is... I think he has shown good skill in leadership.
He took,
you know, being on the front line, being the guy that's going to be, you know, sent out there to do the job. It doesn't look like he's stumbling much publicly at all. I think
he had
good.
A really good week. I mean, from The View all the way to Switzerland, and some of the videos I was seeing took control of that room. And you know, he very well. Very well could end up that Vance takes the brunt of this if everything goes poorly. But also, I think Trump has it set up where on the other side, you have BB, you know, Netanyahu, and Rubio and Hegseth that can take the brunt of the blame if this turns out into a full-on, never-ending war, right? That's kind of the way it's been set up here. King of All Unnamed Texter says, I wonder what Iran thinks they have to gain by not living up to their agreements. Let's see. Martin says, what you're describing is Sharia. Muslims don't have to do anything right, and it's okay according to the Quran. A text from Martin. Joel in Somerdale said, I do not trust those inspectors. I would like to know that there's going to be American inspectors in that group. And C.B. Carl said, good morning, guys. I don't think Lindsey Graham has ever met someone's child that he did not want to send into a war. Some other texts, too. We asked you about your Father's Day and gas prices while you're riding around this morning. Squirrel Vereen said, my dad marks Father's Day by giving money to his offspring, I guess, for having to put up with him.
Well, that's a beautiful sentiment on this day after Father's Day.
Let's see. In Gulf Shores, $3.29 a gallon. Rick says gas in Saraland at $3.13 this morning. Another texter said at Costco they paid $3.14 per gallon. So those numbers are drip, drip, dropping lower and lower as we head into summer.
You know what we get from Squirrel Vereen is Sunday, yesterday, was Father's Day. So the first chance you get the day after Father's Day, dump all over Daddy. Live on the radio.
I don't know if that was a complete shot at his dad. I mean,
well, his dad pays people. He pays the same pays him son, and his siblings to
I guess that's
put up with him.
That's the reverse of what you should be getting on Father's Day, right?
8:30 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. Dan and Dalton, good morning to you.
Mobile Bay starts its day with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
8:35 now on this Monday morning. Thank you for listening to Mobile Mornings, getting your day started with me and Dan. And right now it's time to head over to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Man, we are doing absolutely fantastic. First full day of summer. We've made it. Hot temperatures and afternoon thunderstorms. We know the drill, Louie. And part of your drill should be, you know, checking out the inventory, McConnell Automotive, because you guys have it going on. And anyone out there looking to buy a new vehicle or pre-owned vehicle, they need to check out what you got.
That's right. We've got over 80 used cars in stock. McConnellAutomotive.com, that's the website. That's the site you need to buy cars from. I mean, we've got them out. We got them from you know, Jeeps, to Chevrolets, to Buicks, to GMCs, to Lexus, to Honda. I mean, we've just got them all out there. And then the new car side, best deal going on, 0% on a half-ton trucks. Everybody wanted zero, it's here. Also got a bunch of dagum Yukons coming in. That's I think they turned the faucet on here, so we've got some Yukon Denalis and Yukons and half-ton trucks, plenty of three-quarter-ton trucks pulled in big boats with. Everybody's starting to fish, and all the tournaments are going on. Mm-hmm. And if you can get out there with this weather, but, I mean, like I said, we got a great selection, McConnellAutomotive.com. Don't forget, if you have that unfortunate accident with this crazy rain coming, McConnell Collision. Great body shop back there to take care of all your needs, and just come out on Dolphin Street and see us.
Yep, it's worth the trip. We appreciate your time this morning, Louie.
Hey, thank y'all. Come see us.
That's Louie Arata. Go see him. He's at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and the website, McConnellAutomotive.com.
Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, FM Talk 106.5 at 8:36. Getting texts rolling in here, voicemails as
well.
Yeah,
we'll get to a voicemail here in a second. I want to read some more texts on U.S. and Iran. We'll bring things back, too, talk about some other issues, and then some local stuff here in this last half hour that we have with you. But Joe C. texted again and said, sometimes you need pest control. Wipe out Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. Then, with Israel, wipe out Hezbollah. Enough is enough. You do not negotiate with evil. There will always be evil in the world. It is up to the good to stand up and put evil down. You do not appease it. Finish the job. And then said United Nations Security Council Resolution 1701. And, I mean, I hear you, Joe. I fully understand what you're saying. But what does that entail? What does it take to wipe out every member of the IRGC, which they've done a pretty good job of to this point, wiping out at least a lot of the leadership there and many others within the IRGC. What does it mean to wipe out Hezbollah? I mean, that's been the big hang-up here in these negotiations, is Israel and Hezbollah still getting after it. Yep. In Lebanon, and Trump showing his anger with that late last week, telling Netanyahu, listen, you don't need to bring down an entire apartment building when a couple of drones land in the desert. Now, I don't know exactly what the truth is behind those Hezbollah attacks on Israel. We know they've been doing it for a very long time. Yep. We know Israel's been fed up with it for a very long time. But when you say wipe them all out, you're talking about something that might not even theoretically be completely possible, to be honest with you. And you're also talking about thousands and thousands and thousands of more lives lost. Meanwhile, the economy will struggle worldwide with the way we've already seen the strait shut down and the difficulty getting energy out. So, I mean, basically what you're saying is, let's go ahead and do this regardless of how long it takes and how many lives are lost. And I think that's not a calculation that the president is comfortable with right now, especially going into midterms, and the fact that he said that wasn't what he was going to do with his term.
Our munitions are down, too. We've spent a good bit of our munitions where we're there. I don't know if we're, it has been, Hicks has said certain things and then has pulled back on it, but there's no doubt that what we have, you know, the money we've spent, and if you look at the dollars and the munitions themselves, we don't have what we had.
No.
So we have to replenish there. Also, it's just this, and I think the frustration with Iran is like, okay, we have this memorandum of understanding. Now we've got this ceasefire, right? Whatever. You know, it's not been airtight for sure. And then the first chance Iran gets, like, okay, we're in a path where we're going to negotiate now. They complain about the Israeli strikes on mm-hmm. Hezbollah, and they claim to block up the Strait of Hormuz again. It's one day, 24 hours into this period where things are supposed to get righted. They just continually show that that's not their plan. It doesn't seem to be. I know they're tying it to the complaint with Israel, but immediately their actions have always spoken louder than any words.
Yeah, they have. And I would like to think that's their last and only card that they have to play, is quote-unquote closing the Strait of Hormuz. But I think, and maybe the reason they're at the table now, was the news that Trump broke about a week and a half ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, that while we've been blockading Iranian ships from making it out of the strait, we've actually been sneaking that oil out and making it to market anyway.
Yeah.
And so that Iran, while they're shutting down the strait, we're really doing some damage to them and their economy, and how much longer can they stand on those legs? So maybe, you know, like this weekend where they said they shut the strait down again, maybe that is their last card that they have to play.
And the reports are, again, not to the numbers that they were back in January, but they're on the streets again. I mean, they've almost, I think the citizens of Iran have got, at this point, almost nothing to lose. I mean, yes, they could be mowed down, gunned down. But they have shown for a long time now that intermittently they will hit the streets. Well, right now, that economy, that the living conditions in Iran are so poor. You were talking about Russia, and it felt like you might have been talking about Iran, you know? The conditions, you know, in the middle of a war in Russia are terrible right now with what Ukraine's been able to do to them. And same in Iran, where the conditions are so poor, you have more and more people who are speaking up against it with less and less to lose. You could lose your life. You most certainly could. But it seems to me they intermittently do this, hit the streets, and that may be about to happen again. Now, what happens with it? I don't know. What's going on with the internet? The internet's back up where we can see what's going on in Iran. Have we got more access to that now? I think because they darkened it all for a while, a long time. I think some of it is now seeping out what's going on in Iran, and it is people are up in arms.
Yeah, and I know Elon was able to get several of his satellites in there early on in the war, but you're right, they'd shut down communication for most people in the country.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's starting to get back on its feet or not.
I think it is, and that's what. So when they shut it down, it does two things. It keeps them from communicating with each other, the citizens, and it keeps us on the outside from knowing what's going on inside.
Yeah.
So it takes care of two birds with one stone, but I think that may be over now. I think the internet's, while not flying high, I think that there's been a recovery to some degree.
Florida man said, I believe the point everyone is missing is that we have not destroyed the standing army of Iran. And, you know, I mentioned that at one point last week. When you're looking at those charts of leadership, and some of them have big red X's across their faces, like the original, or at the beginning of this war, the Khamenei, who's not there anymore, Ayatollah Khamenei, and then several others of the top leaders in the IRGC. Pretty much everyone, and I know he's the president in name only, as we call him around here, but Pezeshkian seems to be about the only person left alive from that era of Iranian leadership. But if you look at the actual standing Iranian army, not the IRGC, a lot of that leadership was left alive. And the belief is that they were left alive to, once there is some kind of new leadership that takes over in Iran,
they're going to be the muscle behind.
They'll be the muscle behind that.
To actually affect change and a regime change.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of what I've been seeing around there.
I think you're right.
Butterknife says, this war was mishandled by this administration. They're cutting their losses. We won the fight. They won financially, and we did not recognize their greatest weapon, cutting down the straits. But, you know, did they win financially? Because the Trump administration and Vance and the reports on this deal, which hasn't even been completely struck to this point, are that there are going to be severe restrictions on funds available to the Iranians. And even their unfrozen assets, Vance is saying, will be used to buy American products.
Yeah.
Now, I know you can only trust what a politician says about an impending deal as far as you can throw them. Which, for Vance, you could throw him further than you could 4 months ago, but that's still not very far.
Yeah.
I know he's lost some weight. But so, you know, what the deal actually entails. But what you can't say is that the IRGC and Iran, on the whole, are as in good of shape as they were 4 months ago, because that's just completely inaccurate. They've been really hammered during these bombing campaigns and the covert campaigns by Israel early on in the war with the beepers and then Operation Midnight Hammer.
Yep.
So I don't think they're in any kind of good standing the way that some people keep trying to say that they are. And Butterknife said they're getting to sell their oil on the open market. But yeah, they were doing that, you know, before the war began, and not on the open market. There were, of course, still a bunch of, rules put in place and penalties on them and for those that buy from them. But that's part of the deal that got them to the table and to this point, continuing negotiations. Fire Dog says Iran isn't going to change until there's a revolution inside the country. Even then, what we consider moderates are psychotic nutballs. Another texter, Iran is twice the size of Texas and has 90 million people. Short of dropping a nuclear bomb, which is not an option, there is no way to bomb them back to the Stone Age except for taking out their infrastructure. And Michael says also...
And we could do that, and we have not. And that's all with the idea of you need to leave them with something if you're going to have said regime change.
Right? Yeah, I believe.
You don't want to decimate them completely if you're going to have better people...
to take charge.
Right.
Michael said Father's Day was good, a couple of tomahawk steaks from Mason Hills, and a dozen ears of Silver King from Allegri on the Traeger. Man, you were doing it up. That's awesome. He said it made for a full and happy crew. I've always found it funny that moms want to go out to eat for their day, but dads like to cook for their afternoon. And then he also said, also Israel is bombing Beirut because the Lebanese people are attacking Israelis who've invaded Lebanon and are destroying their country. Who in their right mind wouldn't defend their own sovereign nation? Also, one of our three big things this morning, and we've been touching on this from time to time. I know there was a CBO report out a couple of weeks ago regarding the financial health of our Social Security program.
Yes.
And then a more intricate report detailing how exactly each state will be affected if nothing is done about Social Security and its impending doom, and also with Medicare and that fund. Yeah. So according to that report, and then with 1819 News, Caleb Taylor, is that who was on this story?
Yeah, so Taylor, what he basically did was an analysis, you could say, or the report does the analysis itself, but he reports on it. So a lot of the quotes in here are from
the report.
And the report is from the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. Whoever heard of anything, those people, they're out of their minds.
Talk about screaming into the void,
no
right?
No kidding, right. So there is a Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget out there. That's good to know. So here's what they break down. The cuts to Social Security would affect 978,204 Alabamians. The average retiree's monthly benefit cut in Alabama would be nearly $500.
That's a big number.
A lot of money. $486. The cuts would be at 1.6% of Alabama's economy. The total amount of benefits lost, I think this annually, would be about $5.4 billion that we, the citizens, on Social Security, which I'm not there yet, but I'm closing in on it, and that's the money that we would not receive that we should have paid into.
Yeah,
and it's pretty aggravating. Now I've been reading. Again, this is worst case scenario, I guess you would say.
Yeah, if nothing is done,
But that Social Security is such a loser at the polls. It's such a toxic election.
Pitfall.
Yeah, like if you dare say, well, this is going to happen. I'm sorry, but this is the reality of it all. That your party could be doomed.
No, oh, yeah.
So if you think
of making cuts,
right,
to some of those.
Yeah,
you're in trouble.
But maybe we're getting to the point where people would not be as irate about it because we've been hearing about it for a long, long time now. But that's the thing that's always kept me like, now they'll cut somewhere else. My social will be okay because they'll make cuts somewhere else. And didn't we find out there were many places that we could make cuts when DOGE came through?
Yeah.
That was eye-opening.
But whether those cuts would make the difference in our massive, you know, welfare economy on so many fronts, and people always get upset when I say Social Security is a welfare program, but it is in a way, but it's a welfare program that you've been paying into your entire life.
Right.
And now the same people who have made that thing for their entire working careers are being told that, hey, that return we promised you, as low as it is compared to the stock market, you know, and where your funds would be if you could have invested them with some kind of, you know, return to that level.
True.
Well, even that meager return that you're getting, you're not going to get in its entirety if things go on the way they are.
I mean,
but you're right. It's such a poisonous, you know, mushroom for anyone to campaign and say they're going to do something about it by making cuts, especially. But Trump flew as close to the sun as anyone has on that.
Yes.
And he's talked about some of the changes that need to be made. You have this, you know, Trump child care fund that I've heard some say eventually could maybe take the place of Social Security. I've heard of sovereign wealth funds similar to what they're doing in the Middle East and using that. But we're in big trouble. I do want to play this. So if you download the FM Talk 106.5 app, you can leave us voicemails there as well. Plenty of ways to get in touch with the show. Text line, phone line, but also leave us a voicemail the way Matt did this morning. And he had this to say about this whole Social Security conundrum.
Boy, you guys sure know how to start a Monday morning off talking about Social Security. I mean, I'm all for jokes, but this is one that, you know, really hits hard. And I'm still at the middle of the road. I still got, you know, over 18 years before I would even be eligible. But I want it to be there for people that have put into the system and people that, you know, have been put in the system and they're wanting to receive the checks. You know, it's petty that our politicians can't work on a debt-free budget and worrying about an insolvent, you know, social benefit that benefits everyone that's working. I wish y'all would have picked a different subject for Monday. Anyway, y'all have a...
It's not a fun one, especially for a nation that's $39 trillion in debt. Mm. But it's one that is not being had, that conversation, at the levels that it needs to be right now.
No, and so the numbers are what the numbers are, right? And you've got this report from the fine people at the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. And it's pretty bleak. I mean, $500 less a month than you would have expected on average.
That's a lot of money.
And that's not going to work for a lot of people.
It's not going to work, exactly. 852. 852, almost to 9 o'clock, Dan and Dalton. And, of course, you've got the Jeff Poor Show on the way next.
Turn up your voice on the text line, 251-343-0106. Now, back to Mobile Mornings.
Somebody on the text line says Tuberville doesn't have to sweat this where he lives. He can just run for governor of Florida. So either way, there's, I guess there's going to be an opening there.
Well, you hear Arthur Orr, the state senator. He was on with Dale Jackson on Friday, and Dale will be on with Jeff today at 10:30. But State Senator Orr, he thinks it's over here, this whole Tuberville residency question. He said, with the tax returns and other evidence now public, quote, the fat lady has sung on this thing. So that's what Orr says. Now, with this lawsuit that was filed last week, and Landyap was reporting further on that GOP hearing for Tuberville's residency last week, and it sounds like the anti-Tubbers, I don't know what we're going to start calling the anti-Tuberville people, if there's a snappy name to go with, but they're really depending on the discrepancy. Did Tuberville vote in the Florida elections in late 2018? And when was he officially resident of Alabama? That's what they're hoping. That's what they're staking this on, is that if he voted in the November 2018 elections, there's no way he was a resident of Alabama. He said he was still registered in Florida, so he sent in a mail-in vote for that term. So
the people who are suing, there's a guy from, I know Mobile, also Birmingham.
One from Mobile. I don't recall where the other person's from. Yeah, it was filed in Montgomery.
Yeah, it was filed in Montgomery, and they're basically doing it on behalf of the Democratic Party, correct?
That's what Tuberville's camp is saying. Yeah. And the attorney that is suing him has worked on a lot of lawsuits and other court, you know, goings on for Democrats.
Right.
So doesn't fall far from what appears to be the truth. Coming up on Jeff's show today, he'll have Shane Stringer, state representative, in hour number one, Dale in hour number two, and then